if we just rely on these species in the way that they function naturally, we'd realize that keystone species are nature-backed solutions. They're natural solutions. We don't need to create anything. We don't need to make more machines. We need to just let nature do its work.
Welcome to Impact Investing TV show.
We show you solutions to global environmental and social challenges to inspire you for actions towards the SDGs.
You will also learn the best way to invest your money and create impact while making profit.
Let's discover impact investing world and true sustainability right now.
Welcome to the Swiss Impact with Banerjee, Season 6, Episode 8.
We continue with the theme of season, impact investments in times of crisis. It seems that we're just rolling down, ever-accelerating and hitting one crisis after another. All the present crises of climate change, war, biodiversity destruction proves one thing for sure. That never has the planet required impact investment more, and never were the innovation and technological solutions so easily and economically be available. So it's really the time for impact investments now. And Ben, before we invite our amazing guests of today, what is the story that you have prepared?
So I wanted to tell a very short but true story. So several years ago, around 95, 96, I think, after a lot of political wrangling with wolf hunters, the conservation biologists reintroduced wolves in the northern Rocky Mountains of the United States. And one of these areas, many of you may be knowing, is the Yellowstone National Park. The wolves were introduced after 70 plus years. So initially, it stopped the population explosion of elks, or many people call it deer, although they are not the same.
They're not the same.
No. And the funny part is, after the wolves were introduced, the elks became healthier. And thanks to the wolves, in many places, the natural fauna, flora and fauna flourished again, and biodiversity increased. And with it grew the variety of plants and animals. The riverbank erosion decreased due to the recovering vegetation on the banks. And in fact, it altered the path of the river and altered the geography of the whole place, thus proving it again that top predators or apex predators have far-reaching beneficial effects for the entire ecosystem.
For the audience who don't know what is apex predator, these are the animals which have no natural predator, or in other words, are on the top of the food chain, like lions, grizzly bears, sharks, even giant jellyfishes, etc. Indeed, we are coming back to interconnectedness with the nature. All the species are needed to keep our planet in harmony. And only if the humans are in harmony with the nature, we can make it a thriving planet for all. With this, I'd like to welcome our amazing guest of today, Mrs. Pooja Sharma. Pooja, are you with us?
Yes, hello. Thank you.
Hi. Hi, Pooja. So where are you right now?
I'm based in Los Angeles, California. You guys did an amazing job introducing me. I don't think I need to be on anymore.
We haven't even started the introduction yet.
Absolutely. So I'd like briefly to introduce you to our audience who doesn't know you yet. So Pooja Sharma is the Director of Legal Advocacy and Policy at Keystone Species Alliance. Pooja, you have been jealously advocating for marginalized voices since graduating law school in 2018. Your legal practice includes civil rights, litigation, psychedelic advocacy, and building corporate governance structures for social enterprises. In each of these positions, you were emboldened to advocate for a more just society. Pooja also shifted her focus to biodiversity protection and to advocate for non-human species rights in the natural environment, all in support for a collective shift towards a more ecocentric worldview.
And I was going through your, on the website, you're like the, what is her name, Eric Bronkovich or for the animals?
That's
inspires me.
So Pooja, tell us a bit more. What's your story? How did you end up at this company working as an advocate for, for animals?
Well, thank you so much for for having me here and for giving me the platform to talk about our work at Keystone Species, because like you both noted, it's very important work and the time is now. But a little story about myself. So I went into law school to give the voiceless a voice, and that has just been a basic principle of mine since graduating law school. So yeah, doing civil rights work, doing psychedelic advocacy, and then also helping individuals structure their corporate governances for either nonprofits or B Corps. And actually, Keystone Species is one of my clients at that old law firm, and I helped them get incorporated. And I just really believed in the work they were doing. And I'm like, you know what? Can I volunteer an hour a day? They're like, yeah, sure. And then I just, the more I learned about Keystone Species Alliance, the more invested I became. And I was like, okay, I know this is crazy. I know you guys aren't hiring, but do you need a lawyer? Because everyone needs a lawyer. So luckily we did. And I became a part of the team in December.
Just a question. So what is psychedelic advocacy for people like me who understand nothing?
Psychedelic, I guess, no?
No, it is psychedelic. So it's to decriminalize the use of psilocybin, MDMA, and certain psychedelics for therapeutic use. And in the state of Washington, that's already become decriminalized. So I was doing for the behalf of California.
Could you tell us more about Keystone Species Alliance? What is it and what inspired its formation at all?
Yes, yeah. So I, like I said, I joined the team in December, and in 2022, all of last year, the co-founders, Julia Jackson and Vera Rosenza, founded the company because they realized that there was a big gap in the conversations of fight against climate change. People were not talking about biodiversity at all. It was always about climate. It was all about greenhouse gas emissions, green tech, EV, but not about biodiversity. So Keystone Species are integral to the ecosystem that they're a part of. Without the Keystone Species, the ecosystem that they're a part of is dramatically altered, and that's called the trophic cascade. Ben, you mentioned a great example of the gray wolves in Yellowstone, and that is happening a lot globally. And if we don't do something quick, our beautiful wolves, our apex predators, our coral reefs, mangroves, sea otters, they will be endangered, and we will be part of a climate crisis that is only going to get worse.
So maybe for those who don't know what are Keystone Species, what are those?
Yeah, so they range from either apex predators, pollinators, or even fungi that grow in the ground. So they are integral to the the ecosystem that they're in. If they're removed, then the ecosystem is altered. We are currently working with biologists to find a specific identification process to determine which keystone species is important in that specific ecosystem. Right now, we're working in the state of Quintana Roo in Mexico, and a lot of the organizations are doing the ground level work to reintroduce the keystone species. So jaguars, mangroves, coral reefs, all those are very important to the state of Yucatan Peninsula.
Okay. Right. And how does your alliance approach to conservation differ from other similar initiatives?
Yeah, so we're a 501c4 organization, which grants us the ability to lobby and create policy. So with that, we're able to really push a lot of legislation, do the legal advocacy, and ultimately encourage global leaders to do something about this and recognize Keystone Species as part of their law and legislation.
And are you working only locally or also on international level?
So right now we're a team of four. We're really small, but we are very ambitious and we are working globally. So we first started in Mexico, which is a mega diverse country and holds many important keystone species. So two of our members of our team are working with the initiative in Mexico. We presented a bill to the Senate recognizing keystone species as separate from priority species. And right now, because I'm based in California and I'm only barred in California, not internationally, I am working with more local initiatives with Earth Law Center for the state of Washington.
So becoming more concrete, how do keystone species contribute to the resilience of ecosystems and to the fight against climate change?
Yeah, it's a great question because a lot of this research is just upcoming right now. And this research is being conducted by scientists, by economists as well. So a lot of keystone species, they sequester carbon from the environment itself through, like, for example, elephants. They sequester huge gigaton of carbon by their walking and by their pooping. And without that, then, like I said earlier, the ecosystem would be dramatically altered. So these animals are acting as natural carbon sinks, and they sequester so much carbon just by existing. We don't have to do anything. If nature just operates on its own without human intervention, it will take care of itself.
I've seen that during COVID, right?
Exactly. Yeah, nature restored itself. And I mean, it's really important, the climate initiatives that are happening as well, that give a lot of individuals the agency to feel like they're part of the fight, you know, composting, no single-use plastic, but we need to do bigger, more dramatic changes to create, because the recent ICCF report that came out, it's a little concerning, and we just need to be really proactive now.
Exactly. And can you tell us about your goal? You say identify, protect, and restore.
Yeah. So those are the basic principles of Keystone Species Alliance. So identify the keystone species. What is a keystone species? Many people don't know. So identify the keystone species and why that keystone species functions in that ecosystem as an apex predator, as a pollinator, more or less as a climate engineer. After identifying it, how can we restore it or rewild it back to its original population size so that nature can do what nature is meant to do, just exist? And then protect it as well through legal advocacy and legislation.
But how do you identify the keystone species? Like, do you engage experts, scientists to strengthen this effort, or how do you do that?
Yeah, so currently there is no set identification process. So we are working with scientists. We want to have a biologist on staff so we can grow our team bigger, scale up, and have a very specific identification process so people know that this is a keystone species and this is why we're protecting it in this measure.
Okay. And what are the key steps in restoring keystone species population to historical levels? Something like the Jurassic Park?
Maybe less manipulation with DNA, but more just, I think what will be really impactful is if we're all having this conversation at the same time and we recognize the importance through legal advocacy, through conservation programs, because there's a huge biodiversity loss. And the reason why we're called an alliance is because we're working with lawyers, we're working with indigenous leaders, we're working with scientists, we're working with a cohort of individuals, because as keystone species function in their environment, we all have a function in the way we operate in the world. So how can we maximize our strengths to protect these animals who don't have a voice?
And what's your plan? How do you aim to motivate other mega biodiverse countries to take conservation action?
Like Mauritius, for example.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I thought you were going to give an example about Mauritius. I was going to start dreaming then.
I remember. It's very early morning for you.
With our bill in Mexico, we've gained a lot of buzz about it. We now have 21 senators in Mexico that are in support of our bill. And because it is, like I said, a mega diverse country, we wanted to motivate other mega diverse countries to take charge and also listen, because we're going to be going, ideally, we want to scale up the organization so we have a presence in every country so that we can do the initiative we did in Mexico, in India, in Brazil. And the thing is, a lot of developing countries do have an amazing amount of biodiversity. So how can we empower them to protect their biodiversity, their natural resources?
Exactly. Like one of our previous speakers, she's the president of Mauritius. She mentioned the thing that these countries are so rich in biodiversity. Yeah. They're like the global hubspot. So basically the whole planet should take care of them.
Yeah, 100%.
And you also mentioned on your website biosphere consciousness. And how do you promote it?
Yeah, so we work with Chief Tamale, who's the chief in Uganda, and he's our spiritual voice and our spiritual guide throughout this process. And he mentioned biosphere consciousness because we are asleep right now, and we need to wake up to recognize that we aren't in this planet alone. We share this with, there's a number, I believe it's like 8.6 species that are out there, with plants, insects, mammals, and the ocean. I mean, the ocean is the lungs of the earth. If we don't take care of the ocean, it's just, we need to wake up. We need to wake up to the consciousness, the biosphere consciousness.
What is the most important lesson you learned from ancestral knowledge, which is important?
Yeah, so we also work with indigenous leaders because we strongly believe that they're stewards of the land, and they've been taking care of this land for way longer than we have. So for example, in the legal work I'm doing with Earth Law Center, we are also working with indigenous tribes in the South Sea area to ask them, how do they take care of the orcas? How do they take care of the sea that they've been living around for many, many years? So we are listening, and we're making sure that their words and their traditions are part of the work we're doing.
Yeah, that's extremely important, because previously we also had one of the indigenous chiefs on our TV, just like yourself, Kim, and he also mentioned that they have so many centuries of old knowledge.
Yeah.
But nobody, unfortunately, in the decision-making world of today, nobody seems to be listening to them. So you are giving them also a voice. Are you also listening to them?
Of course. I mean, they're part of our alliance. Like, we wouldn't be able to do this without them. I mean, we're very humble to even be working with them.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what is the role then of indigenous leaders in the company? And yeah, how do you work with them?
Yeah, so we work closely with them by, like I said, by listening and by asking how do they take care of the land before we even begin. We want to make sure that their history and tradition of taking care of orcas, of taking care of mangroves, coral reefs, that's all integrated in the advocacy work we're doing as well.
And how do you plan to influence policy and legislation globally?
By lobbying. So that's why we're a 501c4 organization. We are very adamant about making sure our voice is heard. And I guess it's the idea of us being able to lobby. So along with us drafting legislation, we're also making sure we're very public about our message. Just so global leaders do wake up. We were at the UN conference in Montreal, and because we knew that we were a lobbying organization, we felt really confident and comfortable, really, to speak to global leaders and share the initiative that the rights of nature needs to be part of frameworks, that we need to take care of these species. I'm glad that we're a 501c4 organization, because we can have that mandate to do so.
And I was thinking that lobbying is one act, but other side, because, you know, I have been in the sector of climate change since a long time. Mm-hmm. Other angle can be holding the bagged actors accountable for harming the keystone species. For example, for climate change, now you must have read about it, there's legal cases coming, even as a crime against humanity.
Yes.
That if you destroy the nature, you are doing a crime. So are you also following the legal actor to hold the bad actors responsible?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, our plan with Mexico, even after the bill passes, I'm not going to say if, after the bill passes, it's to have it so strong that if people do not, if they don't acknowledge the keystone species in ways of development or in ways of poaching,
then we can pursue them through litigation. So we're intending to have, we're not a law firm and we don't do litigation, but we have a lot of partnerships with other organizations and want to make sure that affirmative litigation is a possibility once the bills are passed.
That's when do you expect it to happen?
So for Mexico, it's going to be about a year because we just presented the bill in February.
So then you will be truly Eric Brnkovich.
The goal is, though, litigation is holding bad actors accountable, right? So we don't want there to be bad actors. We want to educate people. We want people to be a part of the conversation so they know that we're not in this alone. We should be shifted to an ecocentric worldview. So people recognize that this is important. Our species, they're not different from us. If we look at nature, we spend a day out in nature, we recognize they know how to function. We need to listen to the nature.
Right. And what about your engagement with artists? I've heard you plan to attract attention to artist work as well.
Yeah, well, artists are storytellers, and artists are able to share their story or another person's story or species story. There's so many different mediums, and we have artists in our lives, and we really want to give them that platform to share the story of the voiceless, of species that can't speak. So we just, when we were in Mexico, when we presented the bill and we launched officially that night, we also had artists that were presenting their work about keystone species. And it was beautiful. Like I said, it's an alliance. So we just want to make sure we're all part of this together.
Wow, that's cool. And what are the main challenges that you expect to or you are facing in your efforts to protect the keystone species?
Yeah, so I'm new to the conservation space. I come from a civil rights background, but I already know that the biggest hurdle I personally face is that it's not being talked about the same way that climate change is talked about, green tech is being talked about, the same way EV is being talked about. And I don't know why. I think it's just a lack of knowledge. And from what I've learned in the past 3 months, I am just tapped in and I want to share as much as I can because I am realizing that it's just as important. So I think the biggest challenge is that it is not being recognized as important or as urgent as the fight climate through like other measures.
It's like lack of awareness of impact investing, lack of awareness of many things nowadays, right? So I think it's where we usually start, lack of awareness. Then you need to educate people and provide solutions. So like this is the schedule step by step what we are using as well to make impact investing in normal the same here. It's just takes time,
we're not patient enough, and if we just rely on these species in the way that they function naturally, we'd realize that keystone species are nature-backed solutions. They're natural solutions. We don't need to create anything. We don't need to make more machines. We need to just let nature do its work. And so how can we protect them as an organization?
That's a very powerful statement. We should let the nature do its work. Yeah, exactly.
Now, what are you looking for, Pooja? You need funds or partners or whatever you need out?
So like I said, we're a team of four and we're very ambitious. So we are looking to scale up. We are looking for $4.3 million in order for the next 3 years. So we can scale the organization as well as fund the conservation projects that we are working with. We have partners that are doing the ground level work. We're working with an organization that is tagging leather seaback turtles. And we're hoping that the tags can give us data that we can use to prove that the migration of the leather seaback turtles are important in recognizing the effect that keystone species has in each environment as it's migrating. That requires funds, and those tags aren't cheap. But working with biologists and scientists that are doing ground level work is so important because that gives us the data and we can use that data to input in the legislation. So it just, so we can make it so tight that global leaders have no choice but to listen to us. So funds are great and very necessary as we grow, and also other affiliated organizations who want to collaborate with us and believe in our mission is a priority as well.
And for the funding, you're looking, seeking philanthropic or philanthropic and investment?
Both. We have found that having different models is helpful in this situation, just because we want people to be involved as much as they can or as little. A lot of people have spoken to us about how they believe in the project, but they just don't know how to help. And we just want to make sure that we give them an avenue that allows them to access whatever they have in order to, you know, financially support us or fund us.
Mm-hmm. And can you talk a bit more, you know, about sustainable development goals? So which SDGs are you actually targeting and tackling?
Yeah, so we're targeting climate change, life on land, and life below water. So those three are huge for us. And we know that, like I said earlier about biodiversity not being talked about in the same conversation as climate change, once we share this awareness with individuals and organizations and companies, then they can recognize that our organization will assist in hitting those targets.
Mm-hmm. And what are your plans for the future?
Yeah, so scale up. We really want to grow our organization. We have many ideas. We're working with, we're hoping to create a new category in UNESCO for natural heritage species associated with natural heritage sites. We're hoping to create a resolution in IUCN. And we are also internally hoping to have a biologist on staff who can create a specific identification process for keystone species. We're also hoping to have an internship program where interns come and study and then they get involved as well. And we just want to also grow our fellowship program. Right now we have two fellows, one the individual who's working with leather seaback turtles and someone else who is working in Kenya for to track the African elephants. So the more funding we can get, the more ability we have to support individuals who are doing the ground level work in order for us to have the data for the legislation. And yeah, that's just in year one. So watch out for year two and three.
Cool.
Really, because I can already think about a lot of...
Yeah, I was thinking about WWF for the World Fund for the Wildlife.
So. Yeah.
We can connect you with them if you need.
Please, yeah, we would be so honored. We were speaking, I know one of our co-founders was speaking to someone in Mexico, but the more people we have who believe in our cause and understand what we're talking about or are willing to learn, like you too, it's so impactful because it's a domino effect.
Yeah, exactly. And how do you think our audience can support you or help you?
So as we scale up, the funding is really important. Also, we want to work with organizations who believe in the cause and are, you know, focused on climate solutions, focused on impact investing, focused on nature-based products, because we believe that in order for us to really create change, we need to align with like-minded individuals. Hence Alliance. Like, we really strongly believe that it's not just going to be one person or one organization. It's going to be all of us.
That's amazing. Pooja, the time is running. But we
still
want to ask you. The call to action message to our global audience. What would you like to say?
Yeah, well, I'd like to say that in order to really have an impact in fighting against the global warming that's happening in the world, we need to all work together. And a big way to work together is also to support Keystone Species Alliance. And we are looking for $4.3 million for the next 3 years in order to fund our conservation programs, in order to have our organization scale up. And we also encourage anyone who's interested, any organization who's interested, to talk to us.
to have a conversation with us so we can have this be a dialogue as to how we can all help each other in making sure that this planet is healthier and better for future generations to come.
Wow.
That's amazing. Thanks so much. What would you like to say?
No, I was just going to say thank you so very much. I know it's extremely early morning for you.
Okay. I have a question for you too. So what is your favorite species?
I love elephants.
I like sharks.
Okay, great.
I love all the animals, you know, but the elephant has been always something warm and protective and nice that you can rely on, and it's
ancient.
Yeah. And I can share a story. I've been once riding an elephant, and I was on his neck, not sitting on a chair, really on the neck of the elephant. And when the path was kind of down, he was holding me with his both ears so I wouldn't fall, and it was so cute, you know, wow, he feels really and knows how to protect. And he was also talking to me when I was already down. He made some sound So since then, it's wow, so connected. And it's amazing.
What a beautiful story. A connection that you'll never forget.
Yes, absolutely.
And in my case, I like watching sharks, especially while diving, and they just swim around you. And they are so beautiful and they are so majestic.
Beautiful.
And they just exist as if they're the lions, they're the tigers. There's nothing to be afraid of.
Predators. I mean, and the crazy thing is that right now in human activity is killing both of those animals.
Yeah, completely wiping them out. I thought we lost 98% of the sharks in the world, something like that.
100 million sharks are killed annually. And we need to these are majestic creatures. We can't read about this. We can't talk about this. This is we need to see it. This is beauty. Yeah. This is God's gift to us.
Exactly. Yes. And 99.99%, it is absolutely useless to kill them. We are doing it for the most useless reasons you can imagine, which has no added value at all for any way.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, this is why, to round up, please, what Pooja Sharma is, their mission and the amazing Keystone Species Alliance. Thank you, Pooja, for joining us today.
Thank you both. I really am honored to be a part of this platform, and thank you.
Thanks. Bye for now.
Bye.
Dear viewers, with this we finish the 8th episode of season 6. Next week, we will be presenting another wonderful organization with impact and investment or charity possibilities.
So we invite all impactful businesses out there who are seeking support, branding, investment, come to us. You can apply. You can contact us by using the email apply@iisolutions.ch. Bye for now.
Yeah, and remember, the family is not just your family at home. It's the whole planet, all species, not only humans, but also animals. Bye for now.
Hey, we hope you enjoyed this episode of Impact Investing TV Show. Make sure you subscribe to our channel not to miss any future episodes.
Leave us some feedback and get in touch with us if you want to be our next TV show guest.
And find us on TikTok, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Spotify, podcasts, and any of your favorite social media places.
And join the awesome Impact community. We look forward to sharing the next episode with you. And remember, it's not hard to act.
Just give your heart to impact.